Well, welcome to Palestine Deep Dive, and welcome in particular to our guest today, Mr. Nidal Yunus, who's mayor of Masrafa Yatta in the occupied Palestinian territories, the West Bank. And I'll shortly introduce Nidal to you, but this broadcast to you really happens on another extremely dark day. Today we've learned 77 Palestinians waiting for food aid have been killed, as reported by Al Jazeera, 250 wounded after being shot at by Israeli forces in Gaza. And this follows a statement yesterday from the United Nations in Geneva. And it's just worth a moment's reflection on this, because the United Nations reports that in just over 4 months in Gaza, there have been more children, more journalists, more medical personnel, and more United Nations staff killed than anywhere in the world during a conflict. Now, we're not going to be talking so much about Gaza today, but in the West Bank, less reported, but still of equally shocking in so many respects, many Palestinians have lost their lives, over 400, since the events of October the 7th. But of course, in the villages around Masrafa Yatta, the Palestinians there, the mayor is with us today, have been experiencing the most continual repression and efforts to drive them out of their villages. So I'd like to welcome you, Nidal. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for joining us. Just for people who don't know, Masrafa Yatta is a series of Palestinian hamlets in the West Bank, have been fighting for its survival. The Israeli Defense Forces declared that this area, 12 Palestinian villages in all, should become a firing zone back in the 1980s. And a whole process has been continuing since that declaration to drive people out of the territories that they've been living in for a very, very long time indeed. Now, before again I come to you, I should say that we're waiting. I think there's been a ruling by the Israeli Supreme Court which would pave the way for the demolition of the villages, and that's what we'd like to talk to you today. And also in its ruling, the court said that it had found the Palestinian dwellers, whose inhabitants have kept a distinct generations-long nomadic way of life, had not been permanent residents of the area when the Israeli military first declared it a firing zone in the 1980s. So I just wondered if I could begin by asking you, you know, given what the Israelis are saying about how long your communities have been living and farming and working these lands in the West Bank, how long have you been as a community living in this part of the West Bank? And when did the Israeli authorities decide that you had to go?
Masrafa Yatta has existed for hundreds of years. We can see this with the dates written into the available documents we still have today. For example, I still have my grandfather's chop deeds from Jimba village in Masrafa Yatta. The deeds were formalized in 1883, and there are many other documents since the time of Ottoman Empire, but Palestinians have lived in Masrafa Yatta even before the time of these documents.
Right. And, I mean, it's the United Nations and all member states, the international courts, they're all very clear that the land occupied by Israel after 1967 is being occupied illegally. So I think a lot of people are asking this question, how is it that the Israeli courts are claiming to have jurisdiction over this? How is it the Israeli courts are deciding whether you can stay in your homes?
Sure, the entire world and many international resolutions recognize that this land lies within the border of 1967 and is now occupied by Israel. This is what the international community and free countries believe in. But unfortunately, Israel does not recognize this. Everything Israel is doing each day is against this legal fact. The Israeli Supreme Court's justification of forced displacement of Masafer Yatta's population is that they are constructing a military shooting range. The judge who made this decision is himself an Israeli settler who lives on a stolen land that is not his, dwells in a house constructed without an Israeli building permit. Most Israeli civil administration inspectors who issue and apply these resolutions also live in houses built without permits. This is illegal even under the Israeli law.
Thank you. And I mean, I think we mentioned a figure of around about 700 people, but I don't know if we're correct. I mean, how many people so far have been forced to move over the years against their will by the Israeli authorities? And where have they gone?
As a result of the occupation's restriction placed on Masaf Yatta villages, such as restrictions on construction and developing essential infrastructure, the population of this village has not grown since 1970s. These restrictions force young couples to move to surrounding cities, such as Yatta al-Dhahriya, or even sometimes they are forced to move outside of Palestine altogether. The primary reason behind the decrease in population is because Palestinians are unable to live meaningful lives and reach their full potential as a result of these imposed restrictions. And so hundreds have no choice but to leave Masafer Yatta. The forced displacement started more recently.
And I wanted to ask you also a question about effectively the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from both West Bank and Gaza. But before I do, I just want to ask about the people who have been driven from their homes so far and those who are under threat. Do people receive compensation from the Israeli government? Are they provided with new homes and new lands? What happens to them?
Of course not. The Israeli government only takes part in the forced displacement of these people, and it doesn't take any subsequent responsibility of where these people should go once they have been removed. They illegally kick them out of their lands, which have belonged to them for hundreds of years, and don't even find it necessary to consider where they should go.
It's very shocking, this, Nidal. And I mean, there has been a lot of reporting in the media about your situation before the war in Gaza. But would you say, because people are talking about this now, that there's a deliberate policy of Israel to ethnically cleanse as many Palestinians from their homelands? And do you see a parallel, a similarity between what has been happening with you and your communities and what is happening to people in Gaza now?
The Israeli ethnic cleansing policy toward areas B and C in the West Bank has been ongoing since well before October the 7th. Its intensity has violently increased since 2019, but October the 7th was an extra factor in increasing the ethnic cleansing. In West Bank, we have a silent ethnic cleansing. Its tools are the Israeli civil administration, the settlers, and the constant changes in military law. In Gaza, we have an overt ethnic cleansing. Its tool is the Israeli war machine. Today, we have seen people waiting to receive food aid are getting killed in northern Gaza.
And I wonder, I mean, talking about your daily life in the villages, I mean, we've read that there are Israeli army checkpoints at entry and exit points of your villages. Many years ago, I witnessed that in Jenin on a much bigger scale, the Israeli checkpoints. So I can picture them in my own mind. But can you, for our viewers, explain to us what it's like for, you know, in the daily life of people? What is their experience with checkpoints, and how do they go about there? How can you be farming if you're having to go through checkpoints all the time? Could you just tell us something about daily life?
It's necessary to understand that the road network Israel built in West Bank, known as the detours, was mainly built to serve the settlement and the settlers. It is indeed a part of a system used to swiftly cut all the connections between all Palestinian cities and to easily besiege and surround any village or city, subsequently making people's lives miserable. Pupils suffer to go to their schools, university students suffer to go to their universities and colleges, and people also suffer to go to markets. Instantly after the 7th of October, on the 8th of October, each Palestinian living in the West Bank, in any village or city, was automatically living in extra misery.
And, I mean, have you had, are diplomats, are journalists, are foreign politicians, are they able to come and visit? Have they seen for yourself, for themselves, in recent months, what is happening?
Of course, journalists and social activists cover what is happening. Just 10 days ago, a delegation from the US Congress visited the region and visited one of the displaced villages. They saw how violent the settlers were, and they expressed their concern of what is happening.
And Nidal, I wonder if I can ask you, because of course there's been a lot of pressure being put on the Biden administration in the United States, a lot of anger as well at the support that the United States has been giving to Israel, especially in terms of military aid for what it's doing in Gaza to the Palestinians. But at the same time, the Biden administration did announce some sanctions against a few settler leaders in the West Bank. Do you think that the Biden administration trying to sound a bit tougher or being a bit tougher towards some settler groups in the West Bank will be of any help to you in your campaign? Is this making people think twice before they intimidate you and pressure you?
Unfortunately, these decisions always come late after we almost lose everything. We do have the international law and many international resolutions on our side. They could have helped us to avoid all of this from the beginning, as it has been happening for more than 30 years now. If major countries had pushed to apply this, we could have saved a lot of these lands and blood. Even though this step was taken late, we hope it can be applied effectively and actual actions can be taken, as the violence of the settlers is unbearable. Their violence is not helping any side, and it is only generating a mountain of hatred which won't go away easily.
So Nidal, on the question of those settler attacks, you know, we've seen evidence of that ourselves in our television here, some of the reports that have appeared on the Channel 4 news here in the UK. There's been some quite detailed reporting of settler attacks in the West Bank. But do the Israeli forces, the Israeli Defence Force, offer any protection when these attacks happen in your hamlets? Or do they stand back? Do they encourage it? What are they there for?
Unfortunately, all these attacks by the settlers, who are basically now a ruling government on the ground, are met by the protection of the Israeli police and the army. The Palestinians are always forced to endure these attacks silently.
Now, Nidal, you're here in Britain and with the Balfour Project, and you're going to be meeting and will have met lots of people. Have you had any meetings with any British government ministers? And if you have, and if you do, what do you want them to do? What is your ask of them?
We have met with several members of parliament, and we are planning to meet with the Minister of the State for the Middle East, Lord Ahmed. We have hopes after this visit, and we thank all the people at the Balfour Project. We felt there is awareness of what's happening in Palestine through our meeting at the parliament. We also feel that the Foreign Office is aware of what is happening in Palestine too. We hope actions are taken on the ground to put international pressure on the occupation government to create deterrence against the settlers. The settlement construction in the West Bank are illegal entities, and the world should boycott them and legislate deterrent sanctions against them.
And also, Nidal, I mean, there are members of the British Parliament, MPs as well, from all parties. And of course, many of them are very supportive of your campaign. What would you like them to do specifically? And is there anything that members of the public can do as well? Should they be writing to their members of parliament, putting pressure? What would you like people to do?
We met with several members of parliament from different parties. It is the time now for the parliament, as the source of all legislation, to come up with a new bill to recognize the state of Palestine on the borders of 1967. Such a recognition will put immense pressure on the settlers and will encourage other countries to do the same. We also want the British people to put more pressure on their MPs and the government to achieve peace for the Palestinian people.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nidal. Just a couple of final questions, if I may. And you've had such a struggle over such a long period of time. You've experienced so much injustice and suffering. So many of your people have been driven out. And we've learned from you today that they're driven out to where? They're not given any assistance, any help. They're just told they have to go and leave their lands. But what hope do you have that your communities, the rest of your communities, can remain? You've got a lot of international support, a lot of international attention now. But at the same time, we have seen, especially in Gaza, that even with an enormous amount of attention being focused on what Israel is doing, they still do what they want to do. So do you have any hope that you can prevail and that your communities can remain in their historic homelands, in Palestinian lands?
The situation is so difficult that words cannot help me describe how awful it is now. The maximum people wish for now is simply to know their kids are safe in their houses. Like what happened in Basil's film, we don't have other land or places to go to. We do not have any hope of being given other land. And this is why we stay resilient in our land, despite all the pain we suffer. Every time we get any visit from diplomats or countries, or even from international peace activists, they make us feel hopeful that a change might happen one day through them by putting a pressure on their governments. This is the only way we could stop this. We believe that the key to ending this conflict is with the international community. Even though no actions on the ground have been taken so far, we are still hoping for a change to come through this.
Well, look, thank you very much indeed, Nidal. And thank you very much, both of you, for coming in today. We're very grateful. Nidal Younis, Mayor of Massive Ayatta, occupied Palestinian territories of the West Bank, has been with us today. And thank you so much for your time. We wish you the very best. So thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Until next time, that's all from us here at Palestine Deep Dive.